Welcome to this talk from the Canando Zen Meditation Center. Located in Mountain View, California, Canando's meditation practice is open to the public. For more information or to get in touch with us, you can visit our website at canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.
Good evening. When this practice first arrived here 50, 60 years ago, into San Francisco, those of us that found an interest, thought we were interested in Zen practice, were quite enthusiastic about the practice. And as we started to try to learn what it was all about, meditation and the services and the ceremonies, there was so much Asian influence, you know. But that's what we had, and we didn't have any other experience. So we, of course, used the practice that came from Japan. And one of the things we said pretty early is, you know, we have to learn how to adapt Zen practice to American energies. We all, of course. And that's a very catchy phrase, and pretty much common sense. Very catchy phrase, but kind of vague. You know, what does that mean? The idea, that very idea, can be a problem if we don't understand its meaning. Because on the one hand, America is very charitable. And a very democratic country. We're very enthusiastic. We are creative. That's where we live. But on the other hand, in America, we have a lot of ambition. We're very materialistic. We have a history of being exploitive. So the idea of adapting to American energies, it can be misunderstood and perhaps not applied evenly if we don't understand what we're doing. So Zen in America, so-called American Zen, needs to be allowed to create itself without any preconceived ideas. It has to evolve as our understanding of it grows. So we should always be asking the question, how do I practice in this situation? We should avoid asking the question, how can I practice according to my own personal preferences? We have to watch for that. And it needs to do that effectively. It needs real sincerity of practice. Really focused practice, because it's very easy to be sidetracked these days. Very easy to be sidetracked. Sidetracked by a busy life or our own personal desires or the pressures of our culture. As an example of that, somebody came here and said, "Well, I was here a long time ago, and I started a practice, but life got in the way, so I had to give up my practice. But I'm back now. Life got in the way of practice." We can easily fall into that kind of thinking. So if our motivation grows out of our own personal concerns, we will not be able to see things as they are, which is the point of our practice. See things as they really are. And if we cannot see things as they are, we will not be able to establish true religious practice. To practice anywhere, under any condition, we need to have what we call big mind. What Suzuki Roshi called big mind. In our life, in our various lives, we will get interested in, we will commit to something, commit to giving our energy and our efforts to something when we have a particular vision that drives us, that motivates us, a vision of something really powerful. Now, this practice can be based on a collective vision of everyone. We come together and we talk and we establish a single vision we can all live with. A collective vision, that's one way. Or a vision can be based on some charismatic leader who says, this is it, and everybody buys into it. And there's a danger either way. Because if our vision, our so-called vision, becomes confused with our personal desires, then we have a problem. So we should base our practice on a universal vision. A universal vision that grows as we continue to practice. In other words, a vision that is not limited to ourself or to our immediate surroundings. Usually in our lives we develop a vision of something and it's informed by the experiences of our life, our past experiences. And our vision can energize us, can motivate us to do things. It can cause us to create various things. So being guided by a vision that touches us is okay. But we have to be careful of even our vision. The first thing we have to do is to understand ourself completely. We have to let go of the desires of our small mind and move beyond any confusion or painful experiences we had in the past. We have to come to know ourselves in this moment completely without any distractions. When we engage in this practice and continue it with effort and with sincerity over a period of time, we may be able to create something new. We don't know. But we are not trying to create something new with our practice. We are simply trying to appreciate our inherent freedom and help others to feel free to find themselves. Many years ago, after I had been practicing here for some years, I went to New York on a trip. And I decided to visit Zendo in New York City, in the Rinzai sect. Such a very famous, well-known teacher who had come from Japan. So I thought I would visit this Zendo and see what it's like. And it is in the was in the middle of Midtown Manhattan, in an ordinary neighborhood. And entering in through the ordinary entrance, you come to a very, very beautiful room, very beautiful Zendo, right there in the middle of Manhattan. Zendo, well, the center itself occupied two floors of this house, and the Zendo downstairs was two long rows of cushions. Not this way. Two long rows of cushions. And when you entered, you could see them. And down at the very end was an altar. And behind the altar, behind a glass window, was a very large stone that was lit in ways to bring out the qualities and the surfaces and the shape of the stone. And it was quite striking, beautiful, beautiful thing. Very impressive, the stone. So after Zazen, and I was having a cup of tea with people that get saying hello, and I'm from California, this sort of thing. And so I asked about the stone. That's a very striking stone. And a woman told me it's from Tassajara, a gift of the San Francisco Zen Center. It's very special to us. All I could think of was it must have cost a fortune to ship it from California, to drag it out of the creek at Tassajara, drag it up the hill over the mountain, and get it to a truck or something. To the people in the Zendo in New York, it was a very special stone from a very special place. Now, when Tassajara first opened many years ago, and we would start to visit it, people would start to visit it, this very special place, they would take a stone from the creek, and bring it back home. Put it somewhere. Special stone from Tassajara Creek. That practice is very much discouraged now. It's like tourists were coming to take away souvenirs. And Suzuki Roshi said, no. Good idea. But people did that. They took away stones that they could hide in their luggage or something, put it in a special place at home and admire it and study it and explain to their friends where it came from. Now, if you go outside here, just outside the Zendo where we have a stone drainage system, if you pick up a handful of those small stones, they don't seem very special. These little creek stones, they don't seem special like that huge stone from Tassajara. In our mind, big, special. Or if it's from far away, it's special. Come from a special place, it's special. But when you study carefully these stones that you pick up, these small ones that don't look special, when you study them carefully, you see they are just as special as that stone from Tassajara. Or a stone that you might bring back from the moon that's put in a very special place. Same is true if you pick up a handful of sand from the beach. You would say, oh, this is just sand. Nothing special. But if you really look at it, put aside all the preconceived ideas of your mind, and all the judgments about special and not special. If you look at the handful of sand, you will see that those stones are more interesting than the Tassajara stone. If we can practice without any notion of it being special, then this practice will establish itself. That is, I mean, without any idea of it being Japanese or American, the practice will be just about seeing or feeling or hearing the truth of things. Seeing the truth of things independent of our own personal stories of or of our national energies. Just the practice. The fundamental human energy is the movement towards freedom. This is our universal vision, to be free. Not just politically free, but free in all ways. And our practice establishes itself based on freedom. And we need to remember this truth. We come to practice because we want to be free from our karma or our trauma or whatever you want to call it, of all the things that we carry around that hold us back and prevent us from seeing clearly. That's why we practice, to be free. Every culture and every nationality has some kind of notion, idea of itself. This is who we are. But our practice should be based on, should be established independent of national concern. When people come to practice, when we feel we really want to practice, that we must practice, it means that we want to be independent of any conditioning that the world or our culture may try to put on us. Free from conditioning. That's why we practice. We want to be free. So, Buddhism began and still is based on the concept of no self. No self. Which is to say, letting go of ideas of a self. And what that means to us in our everyday life is we let go of attachments, our personal attachments, and simply accept whatever it is that appears in our life without judging. So we should always be ready to set aside our own personal goals and let go of any personal vision we have of ourself. If we want to engage with someone that we meet, we want to engage with them fully in this moment, then in this moment we have to set aside any personal vision we have of ourselves. So it means that we avoid doing something if it's only for our self-oriented vision. We don't do something for our own self-oriented vision and ignore people in trouble. So, in Zazen, about as we continue our Zazen practice, we find that we advance in freedom each moment. Each moment we let go of a future vision, we can let go of a future vision, and we can let go of our past conditioning. That's how we advance in freedom. Freedom means being what we must be in each moment. How do we know what we must be in each moment? We have to be aware of each moment. Fully aware in each moment. To be what we must be in each moment means we have to clarify the situation of the moment completely. Now, if we want to find something special, like a stone from the moon, there's no need to hop around the universe. Feel something special, we simply appreciate our life in every moment and observe the things in front of us and live completely in our surroundings, where we are now, totally immersed. But if we get caught by ideas of something special, we lose our way. In ancient China and in Japan, it was very common for the emperor to give a specially made robe to the famous teachers of the time, out of special silk and special cloth and with jewels, this kind of thing. So Dogen, who's the founder of our school in Japan, when he received the purple robe delivered to him from the emperor's messengers, he refused it, sent it back. And this happened twice. Send it back. But the emperor finally said, you must accept this robe. So Dogen said, okay. But he didn't wear it. And he wrote a letter back to the emperor, and in it he says, I very much appreciate your purple robe, but I am afraid I can't wear it, because if I wear it, birds and monkeys in this mountain will laugh at me. Special. And it's that spirit where we find the meaning of Zazen. It is the way of life we should follow as a human being. In other words, we should not be fooled by things and not be fooled by ideas of something special. Birds and monkeys will laugh at me. Does anybody have a question?
Aren't certain accomplishments special, like Mozart writing a symphony, or Picasso doing a painting, or someone becoming a Buddhist teacher? Aren't they special in some way?
What Mozart did is no more special than the person who picks up the trash from the street. And a teacher who people think are special, if you ask them, why do you think he is so special, they will say, oh, because he's so ordinary. Because he doesn't act special. And it's a great relief, you know, when we meet someone who we say, special person, and we get to know them and we see, oh, they're ordinary like me. I can be like that. They're just doing what they're doing with enthusiasm and energy and determination, and they don't think it's anything special. The lesson in all this is we as individuals should be cautious, careful about thinking that some things that we do are special. What we're doing is simply expressing our life. And if we do something that others appreciate or that's helpful, we say, good, but don't say special. So there's some well-known stories of people who go to see a famous Zen master. Please teach me. Zen master says, have a cup of tea. In other words, I don't have anything special to teach you. Yes.
You touched upon the topic of motivation for the practice. And I do struggle with that quite a bit. I do, from time to time, think about that quite a bit. When I started my practice, one of the motivation was, to better myself, to be more at peace with myself, which is a bit selfish. But then on the other hand, you could have goals like to benefit the sentient beings, to benefit others. But that seems very, the goal seems very lofty and daunting, almost unattainable. So how do we think about motivation? There are these two extremes, and you did touch upon having a common vision, a common motivation. It wasn't very clear to me what actually has to be our motivation.
I think before we try to consider or allow ourselves to be motivated by accomplishing something very large or something for other people, we first have to be motivated by living our own life as authentically as we can. Unselfishly. We have to start there by being as unselfish and as giving as we can be. It's like a vow we make to ourselves and to the world, you know, silently. I'm going to be as complete, authentic as I can be. That's the starting point. Everything else will flow from that.
Yes. Thank you for today's teaching about regarding special act as not special. It seems like there are two aspects of how you regard practice. From what you mentioned, like getting rid of any past conditioning as well as not having any special visions of the future. So my question is, like, would it be healthy to live in today's world without having vision for future or near-term future? For example, I guess, can you be completely present and still be able to plan for future?
Say that last part again.
Can you be completely present and still be able to plan for the future?
It's absolutely vital that we be fully present when we plan for the future. Otherwise, the future may result in some problem. If we're not completely present, or if we don't allow ourselves to see the future in a big way, we may do things that seem very good, but have some hidden problems that we only discover later. So we must be completely present when considering the future, in order for the future not to surprise us and create problems. So let's start with being really present in this moment. Thank you. Yes, please.
So I have a question regarding ambition. And so if So I'm going off to college, and I have something I really want to study, but I really don't know if it's a personal ambition or an ambition to help others. In that case, what can I do to distinguish if it's a personal or a selfless ambition? Thank you.
You have to, I think the best thing to do is to follow your instinct or your intuition about what's the right thing to do, and pay careful attention all the time to make sure that you're not overlooking something. Keep paying attention so that various things can appear to you. And it's your own attentiveness to your effort that will keep you straight. But if you just start off on a direction that you feel very excited about and say to yourself, this is it, I don't have to think anymore about it, you may one day say, oh, why did I do that? So stay aware, pay attention, keep an open mind, and follow your intuition, and just watch it. You learn.
This talk was brought to you by the Canando Zen Meditation Center in Mountain View, California. For more information or to support this podcast, go to canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.